Okay. It's almost like I've forgotten how to do this. I promise I haven't. This is indeed the 23rd day of December 2021. This is The Horn. And HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you also go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is not normally live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in the middle in the Great Globe Round. What I had done is I had forgot to hit the record button. Is there any hope for me?
If you don't do it right, I'm going to come over there and take it away from you. So there you go.
If I don't do it right, she's going to come over and take it away from me. Well, that was just hateful.
I'm just waking up.
Okay. A little cranky when she wakes up. I should know that after all these years. No, but every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. That means we send out thanks this day, this 23rd day of December 2021. I'm going to say that a lot, so that when this is a rerun, nobody will... Right, yeah. Thank you very kindly to our dear friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow and to Stacy. Thank you, Stacy. Thank you to Philip in Maryland. Thank you to Cecilia. Thank you oh so kindly to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of San Diego. Thank you to Colin. Thank you to Harold, President and CEO of Sotstris, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thanks to Billable Rick. Thank you to Vincent. Thank you to Ralps. Thank you to Reverbo. Thank you, Armand. Thank you, Dr. John in New Mexico. Thank you to Clayton. Thank you to Sharon. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. And that, I think, gets us all caught up. Those are our partial sponsor of the program subscribers for the 23rd, 22nd, 21st, and 20th day of the month. And so where does that leave us fundraising-wise? Well, yeah, okay, somewhere around... and thank you very kindly to our dear friend Christopher. Christopher jumped in via Venmo and helped to meet the Blame It on Rio challenge from Joey and Giraffe yesterday. Thank you, Christopher. And so what we're looking at is basically $1,800 to get caught up with fundraising. And then I do some more math. Because thank you very kindly to an anonymous friend of the program who did have a show on me, and which means that we are at $1,500 to get all the way caught up and make the whole bill-paying, driving-home experience a lot less stressful. So thank you to our anonymous friend. Now, having said all that, Bette Midler. Well, you're the one that told me I needed to address this, so I am.
Oh, no, I'm booing her, not you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for not booing me.
No problem.
It was back on Sunday when, in a fit of pique, Bette Midler had a hissy over Joe Manchin and tweeted the following. Bet. You are not the wind beneath my wings when you do things like this. What Joe Manchin, she typed, who represents a population smaller than Brooklyn, has done to the rest of America, who wants to move forward, not backward, like his state, is horrible. He sold us out. He wants us to be, and this is where it becomes, I guess, art or something. He wants us to all be just like his state, West Virginia. And in describing West Virginia, she said that West Virginia is poor, illiterate, a and strung out. My, oh my, oh my. Made me just want to stand up and sing The Hills of West Virginia. Oh, the hills, the beautiful hills. How I love those West Virginia hills. If over land or sea I roam, still I think of happy home and my friends among the West Virginia hills who are all poor, illiterate, and strung out. Thanks, Bet. Thanks for making it so much easier for people like Joe Manchin to be as shitty as Joe Manchin is, because, you know,
them liberals, they're just a bunch of coastal elite snobs who don't understand the hard-working people of West Virginia.
I hate it when our side does the other side's work for them. Now, granted, at some point in time, she did, having gotten a shit ton of grief. She apologized. And it wasn't one of those non-apology apologies either. It wasn't one of those, I apologize if anyone was offended, that the Republicans are always doing. This was the real thing. It was a straight-up apology. And she said, I apologize to the good people of West Virginia for my last outburst. I'm just seeing red. Not apologizing if the poor, illiterate, and strung-out hillbillies were offended, but straight-up apologizing to the poor, illiterate, and strung-out hillbillies.
That was not an apology.
No, it was. It was a real apology.
No, it wasn't.
No, she says, I apologize to the good people of West Virginia for my last outburst. That's not, I apologize if you were offended. That's not a Republican non-apology.
If I hit you in the eye because I'm seeing red. Right, that's not an apology.
Well, right. She didn't say, I apologize if. She said, I apologize. So I give her credit for that. I'm just seeing red. Joe Manchin and his whole family are a criminal enterprise. Is he really the best West Virginia has to offer its own citizens? Surely. Don't call me Shirley, Bet. There's someone there who has the state's interests at heart, not his own. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe I'm doing a little civics lesson for someone who, A, isn't even listening, and B, is 78 years old, and C, really should understand this a hell of a lot better. But it is kind of a historical thing. Do you realize that up until about 120 years ago, the vast majority of the people of the United States were not that far different than people who lived in West Virginia? No electricity. Running water, kind of scarce. Indoor plumbing, not so much. Rural, not urban, in terms of locale. But along came technical marvels like the automobile and flush toilets and citified water and electricity. And the next thing you know, well, what also happened along about the same time is that the New York Times began sending reporters, New York Times, down here to cover the Hatfields and McCoy feud. And Lord, didn't those city slickers have a high old time. And no kidding, the New York Times' and other publications' coverage of the Hatfields and McCoy feud is the origin of the ignorant hillbilly stereotype. Mm-hmm. Truth. I mean, that's, and then Hollywood picked up on it in the, what, 40s and 30s and 40s and 50s with folks like Ma and Pa Kettle. And even though it was set in the Ozarks, we, you know, the Appalachians take all the shit for, like, Little Abner. West Virginia gets shit for the setting of Deliverance, which was actually about a trip in down a Whitewater River in North Georgia, right? But nonetheless, people, I mean, and we make it worse for ourselves. There's a an adventure company not far from where we live that sells T-shirts that bear the statement, "Paddle faster, I hear banjos." And of course, Ned Beatty. Yeah, you know that famous Tom Petty song, "Ned Beatty had the hardest part." Never mind, I'll let myself out. But that really is the origin of the what was that phrase again? There, bet, poor, illiterate, and strung out. But the part about anybody with West Virginia's best interest at heart, her observation has some validity. But because our political class has never been very good at having West Virginians, real everyday West Virginians' best interest at heart. Annette knows this. I know this. Anybody who's ever spent much time living in West Virginia knows this. The closest we ever got to a politician who really had West Virginia's best interest at heart was a man by the name of Ken Heckler. I think Ken made it all the way to 100 years old. He's the one who represented part of West Virginia in the House of Representatives for a time. He was a colleague and contemporary of Harry Truman. He was the first one to step forward and say, "By God, something has to be done to save West Virginians from the scourges of death and gassy, mismanaged holes in the ground called coal mines, where people die like flies." Things like black lung legislation, the coal mine, the Mine Safety and Health Act, MSHA, were largely the work of Ken Heckler and, to a certain extent, Robert C. Byrd. And that's the last time that, at least on a national level, West Virginia, okay, maybe a little, no, that's the last time West Virginians had had representation in Washington that actually seriously gave a good goddamn about West Virginians. I mean, you can mention Nick Joe Rahal, a good man as far as it went, but he was entirely a creature of the coal industry. He did manage to put together the legislation that created what we now know as the New River Gorge National Park, so he gets credit for that. But Joe Manchin, Shelley Moore Capito, Shelley, of course, being the daughter of the single most corrupt politician ever to hold office in the state of West Virginia, meaning her creepy old daddy, Arch Moore, who back in 1972, when the Buffalo Creek disaster took place, and a huge wall of toxic waste roared down the Buffalo Creek holler and killed hundreds of people and displaced thousands. Arch Moore sent the National Guard to Buffalo Creek, not so much to help with the cleanup or save lives, but to make sure that them meddlesome journalists didn't get in to see what a godforsaken nightmare mess his buddies at Pittston Coal had created. That's not a joke. The history of governors of this state, not a good one. And there's been a long-standing notion that and it was among the political class, that West Virginians really can't have a state of their own, that we can't make it on our own. We have to have massive infusions of corporate abuse, I mean cash, from outside the state, because, you know, all we got's a bunch of scenic beauty and, let's see, what was that, poor, illiterate, and strung-out mountaineers. And so I really did kind of get irritated with that, because, like I said, Bette Midler made it easy for other people to join in that stereotype. Fortunately, this community being insofar as this program is almost two decades old, this community, I hope, knows better about West Virginia. Although from time to time, I'll still get one of those notes along the lines of, why don't you people elect better leaders? And so when Bette Midler says something like, is Joe Manchin really the best West Virginia has to offer its own citizens? The answer is easy. No, he's not the best. He's not the second best. He's not the 452,363rd best. But he does, however, own the West Virginia Democratic Party. It has become nothing but a cult of personality for him personally.
It sounds to me like Bette's friends with J.D.
J.D. Vance.
Vance and Opie. And Opie screw you, too.
Okay, Ron. So, yeah, she's real pissed off at Ron Howard. Still is. And that has a way of holding a grudge.
I can hold a grudge, yes.
You mean y'all got a grudge and not a carport? Exactly.
Not pretty much.
We ain't even got no carport.
Sure.
Let alone a grudge. But what Annette says is right. I mean, hell, Bette probably watched Hillbilly Elegy and thought it was great cinema with Glenn Close playing Meemaw or what the hell ever that character was.
It's a classic.
It's a classic, isn't it? Yeah, you betcha.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Joe Manchin is who West Virginia has because the Republicans have never been known for running decent human beings for office. They run creatures of various and sundry industries, coal being the tops among them, but now also with competition from the pharmaceutical industry. As I've noted in the past, remember, the guy who is West Virginia's Attorney General is a fellow I refer to as pill-pushing Patty Morrissey, who literally was a lobbyist for the company that dumped millions of hydrocodone pills all over this state, enough for every single West Virginian to be, strung out. Yes, there we go, strung out, and have a whopping big opioid addiction. There's a really good series with Michael Keaton in the lead that's receiving some good notice. It's called Dope Sick, about a small town doctor who deals with the opioid epidemic in Appalachia. It's worth the watch. It's over on Hulu, I think. No, Joe Manchin's not the best we have. But the best we have doesn't have any goddamn money. The best we have cannot compete with people who have basically spaceship money to run campaigns. That's, the money is the grease on the gears of American politics. Our political system is as capitalist as everything else. And so somebody with good ideas, somebody with a good heart, somebody with a great mind, doesn't have a prayer compared to somebody like, Joe Manchin. Or, not to make him exclusively the whipping boy of this topic, but also people like Shelley Moore Capito, daughter of the, as I said, the single most corrupt man ever to hold office in the state of West Virginia. Or make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, and in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I, as West Virginia's only billionaire, going to sit still while somebody sits and talks about Joe Manchin being possibly the best West Virginia has to offer. There's a reason that I'm as good as I am. I am sitting on a $1 billion worth of money that I got to give back by day after tomorrow, and I got to figure out a way to spend it. Or I got to give it back to the, that communist, that communist Joe Biden. And I think Agnes had something to say here.
Yeah, that's why Justice is making a new nursing program. I think it was 48. billion.
No, we're going to spend $48 billion on a new nursing program?
I don't know, but he's going to throw some money that way. And thing of it is that's great. The nurses don't want to work now because, you know what? The bean counters are killing them.
Yeah, well, the bean counter, the bean counters and the Rona.
Well, and the Rona, but the bean counters make it possible because they want a short staff.
What about, 5-1?
Remember that expensive cougar there, dear.
Dear, let's not talk like that, please.
I'll be back.
Some help I get sometimes.
I can still hear you.
I didn't say anything. So we got Bette Midler, which is good or not, depending on how you look at things. Let's see here. I had a note earlier, just a little bit ago. Come on. Let's try this way instead. It will be so nice to get home to my home, comfortable home studio. I'm just checking the in. No, John in Central PA, I am not related to the Hatfields. I'm also not related to the McCoys, although I know some McCoys. Nice people. I know some Hatfields. They're nice people, too. Yeah, Greg, you're right. Don't forget about the Beverly Hillbillies. Beverly Hillbillies, the Petticoat Junction, Green Acres, all of that. And it gets, and that's where we get our... That's where we get our reputation from. Thanks, Hollywood. Billable Rick, thinking ahead, says, does Bette Midler have any dates scheduled in West Virginia for her next consort tour? My guess is no, or perhaps you can visit your state with Hillary. Oh, damn, that stings. Billable, I thought you were asking, does she have any concert dates scheduled soon because you were thinking about getting tickets? Ooh, that's cold. I offer up to the universe that today's show lasts more than 5 minutes. Matt in San Francisco says, "Well, the universe has heard your offering and has complied." And let's see, we've been at it for about a half an hour now. Maybe this thing really is fixed, and wouldn't that be wonderful? Let's see. Subject line, Christmas 2021. This is a holiday that comes with a considerable amount of angst. Stephen New York says, I'm honestly not sure why I'm writing this. Perhaps I'm venting. Perhaps it's out of a sense of feeling I actually have something to say. I'm not sure. It's been 2 years since I saw my partner. That would be 2019. I was really looking forward to this Christmas. Obviously, we both were. I got the vaccine and the booster. I needed to get a PCR test within 72 hours of my flight. The ordeal just to do that was exhausting and expensive. I went to a testing site that advertised results within 24 hours. Waited there an hour or two. They said that it would probably be 3 to 5 days because labs are swamped. I said I was traveling Friday. She suggested I go to Terminal 5 at JFK because they're doing tests for travel. Rather than do that, Steve writes, I looked for places close to me that specifically did travel testing. Got to the place I found via Lyft, and there were about 200 people in line. I immediately hopped another Lyft to a private place $40 plus for back-to-back trips. Got there at 1:22, still waiting. That'll cost $225. At least I'll have results in time so I can travel. At about 5:30 a.m. by email and $300, I got the results. Shit, I tested positive. Initial depression, no partner, isolation for days, inconvenience for my roommate. Now I have to spray Lysol and disinfect the bathroom, the kitchen, every light switch, door handle, and surface I touch for days. This didn't have to happen. As attenuated as it may be, I cannot help but be disgusted at Orange Voldemort and his minions of Death Eaters, not just here, but those around the world who hold to this crazy, hyper-selfish view of personal liberty and freedom, with who equate wearing a goddamn mask with Jews wearing Magen Davids in the Third Reich. Not only will these idiots not do something as simple as wearing a mask, they remain unvaccinated because vaccines make people magnetic, have barcodes in them, and, you know, don't work, contain mercury, cause autism, are experimental, or, you know, whatever. To pour salt into alcohol or even lie in a wound, what was, just a few months ago, an out-there Looney Tunes notion that Dr. Fauci funded, created, or fomented this pandemic, or UK politicians saying to trust the people, not the scientists. Yes, the head of the House of Commons said that. Is now coming from the mouths of the only half-crazy likes of Senator Booger Eater, saying Dr. Fauci is the most dangerous bureaucrat ever. I can't help it, but I point my finger at all of these people. Yeah. I'll be 51 on January 2nd. No, I don't consider myself old. I don't consider myself young either. Statistically, I have 30 years of life left. Every holiday, every hour away from family becomes ever more precious. Every hour away becomes a larger proportion of time left. That's time lost forever. Why do I write this? I'm serious when I say I don't know. Certainly is it is not one person or even 100, 1,000 or even 100, 1 million people who have caused this. However, what we know is this: crowds and groups are greater than the sum of their parts. Groups and crowds take on the character of a single organism with a single purpose, direction, and mentality. Collectively, we can blame these people for this, for lost relatives, for lost friends, and most of all for lost time. And lost time is much more profound than lost money or any material item. Once one spends time, it's gone. I feel robbed. I don't feel sorrow or pity or compassion for these people. They have cost me 2 Christmases with my partner and countless other hours. So thanks. Signed, Steve. Yeah. I get it. I get it, Steve. I so do. And, well, maybe you're a little bit more civilized, a little bit more generous than I am. Because I'm actually willing to blame certain people for why this all is the way it is. Because that blame is inescapable. Well, you know, blaming anybody doesn't change anything. Well, actually, it kind of does, doesn't it? It does make a difference. Causation makes a difference. That's how we correct problems. And I'm weary of the seemingly incessant rounds of blame. It's absolutely infuriating. When I say blame, I'm not talking about the blame for people who deserve the damn blame or don't deserve the blame. I'm talking about the people who do deserve it. Nitwit Nero and his cast of fascist miscreants and fuck-ups and dead-enders and ne'er-do-wells and foot-pads and cut-purses who let this whole thing burn to begin with. The goddess of irony was paying attention the other day. Nitwit Nero did a public event with Falafel Man, you know, Bill O'Reilly, the guy who was going to, sexually abuse a woman with falafel. He meant a loofah, but he said falafel because he was all drunkity drunk at the time. And he said, "Well, I've gotten a booster." And the assembled maggot faithful booed him roundly and soundly, lustily even, with gusto. The maggots are now down to booing their god emperor. How about that? But make no mistake, I'm in a place where you are far more likely to see someone without a mask than with one. I mean, by a factor of probably 100 to 1. Damnedest thing. We don't go around without masks. Annette and I are and have been hyper-vigilant on this. And this state will probably eventually be absolutely afire with Omicron, to the extent that anyone tests to find out, and therein lies the rub. And we'll be driving through Tennessee, and Tennessee has one of the highest per capita case changes in the country. Kentucky, a little better. And oddly enough, on the maps that I've seen, it goes from decrease to increase to, let's see, what's the other term? Decrease, increase, trend, and then blood red is spike. And oddly enough, West Virginia is only in increase. I guess the poor, illiterate, strung-out people, the virus just has a harder time working its way up the hollers, I guess. Yeah. It's a damn challenge. So when we go up that, I'm hoping we can make it as far as Bardstown, Kentucky, before we knock off on Christmas Day. But we'll stop when we have to stop. Yeah, I had a little milestone. This was nice. Milestone, not gallstone, damn it. A little milestone. I'm now driving without the benefit of the donut cushion. It is easier and more comfortable for me to sit on a folded blanket than on that donut cushion. And that's a profound step forward. It's a good sign. But we've got other things to go into. And it is the COVID business is just the COVID stuff is just a starting point. One of those places is there's a paranoid fantasy running through maggot land these days. This is from the Department of You Cannot Make This Shit Up.
a bunch of maggots went to a conference in Dallas this past weekend. It was like the Rejuvenate and Freedom Conference or some such. And almost every one of them now has COVID. But they won't admit it. Because, well, I mean, you know, maggots. What are they saying instead? Well, they are declaring that... Let me see if I can pull this thing up. We have been we are under an anthrax attack. They've got coronavirus. They're eaten up with coronavirus, but they're still barking and grunting and hooting and etc. That they're having an anthrax attack. Because it's impossible for them to simply admit that, well, that they got a disease that they've been arguing isn't a disease, that is a Chinese hoax. Right? Yeah. Yeah, they got an anthrax attack, the maggots do. It was a super spreader event. It was a huge gang of people. I think this was the same the same gathering, the same clavern or whatever, cross burning, I'm not, where Jesse Waters, he used to be the little stalker dude for the aforementioned Bill Falafel Man O'Reilly. He strode across the stage at this event and called on people, and this is the word he used, called on people, well, and I use the term people loosely, called on them to hunt Dr. Fauci. Yeah. To hunt Dr. Fauci. You know, like you would, say, a deer or a squirrel. And, of course, you're not hunting Dr. You know, you don't hunt a deer or a squirrel. This is not one of those damn photo safaris or something. Oh, no. You hunt them, of course, to kill them. Curiously enough, Jesse Waters has not been taken into custody. Jesse Waters has not been admonished by federal authorities, because Jesse Waters would naturally get all, you know, butthurt if Jesse Waters was actually to be called to account for suggesting that political morons hunt and harm the single most highly trained and specialized public health authority in the United States of America. Maggots. There you go. But no, it's not a joke. They were sending out messages, these maggots. This group of attendees all became sick in the days after the event, with the usual coughing, shortness of breath, fever. Oh, and by the way, one of the things that's turned marking Omicron as somewhat different from its previous in manifestations is people tend not to get, or rather not to lose, their sense of taste and smell with Omicron. It really is mutating to become something that is just a matter of everyday existence. It has become, and it's a big word, of course, but we do big words here because we do the art of word knowing in the Horn Family Community Congregation. It has become endemic. Not pandemic, not epidemic, but endemic. Endemic means it's kind of like what Jesus said about the poor. The poor you have always with you. Well, if Jesus had known big Latin and Greek words, he would have said the poor are endemic. But over amongst the sick maggots, there was David Clements. He said that Joe Altman, Jovan Pulitzer, and a dozen others at the Reawaken America tour are, and these are his words,
suffering from symptoms related to an anthrax attack.
Yeah. No, really. And it all started on a stupid right-wing podcast. And it was spread by a guy who's been spreading election conspiracies all year long. At this event, there was Mike Flynn, Roger Stone, Mr. Meth Pillow, Mike Lindell, Eric the Dumber showed up. Right. And this Altman character said, there's a 99% chance it's anthrax. There had been not a single positive anthrax test anywhere along the way. Yeah. But dude said he was taking doxycycline to ward off the effects of the anthrax attack. Yeah. Because it can't possibly be COVID, because that would mean that they you know, created their own COVID crockpot. Yeah. And then, of course, being a right-wing conspiracy, it went around the world before the truth could get its boots on. Yeah. So, you know, we've got that, which is kind of, well, not hilarious. No. And of course, there's big news today because, let me see here. I'm going to have to, wait a minute, stand by. Let's see if this will work. Big news today because there's an actual conviction in a court case. Jurors in Minneapolis actually managed to convict the dry-crying homicidal cop. Potter was her name. Hey, try that call again. I was moving around and didn't quite succeed in bringing it in. There we go. We'll see if we can make this work yet. That's a little hot, sorry. Yeah, but no kidding. They convicted her on all counts after she had dry cried for a while on the stand. Kim Potter, I'm talking about. They found her guilty on all charges. And the interesting thing, as Julian Ann Arbor pointed out to me, she said earlier that the dry-crying cop took her verdicts like a graven image, no? If she really had such raw feelings of regret and sadness over what she did, she would have fallen apart today, just as she pretended to do on the stand. Oh, if she, and the fact of the matter is, if she had been acquitted, well, If she had been acquitted, she would have bawled, and the tears would not have been fake. The tears would have actually been tears. But in this case, no, she was, as Joy noted, as silent as a graven image, because all her phony baloney tears didn't work. So now she faces substantial prison time for shooting him when she made the mistake of thinking her taser was her gun was a taser. Never mind the fact that the taser was yellow and the gun was black. And so sentencing has to wait now for a while. They'll do a pre-sentence investigation report. And there will be, and there will not be justice unless she does a substantial amount of prison time. Let's run over to the line and see if I actually connected to Scott. Are you there, Scott?
Hello.
There you are. Yes, you're there.
Sorry, I had to unmute myself. I had muted myself because I had forgotten I got to take some medicine. So if you'll bear with me.
Oh no, that's okay. I hear the caps popping now.
You can
not in a violent way. I'm not talking about popping a cap in. No.
Pop a cap in your butt. No, you and the Horn family can hear me swallow. Hang on. Just a minute. Fine. One minute. Good stuff. Hey. Sorry about the confusion with the phone earlier. I usually like to wait an hour before calling in because...
Oh, that's okay. I've had so many technical problems, you know.
What's one more?
You got to strike while the iron's hot and the stream is streaming.
Yeah, that was the slogan, the labor action slogan of the Pants Pressers Union. Yes, when they staged a wildcat yes. Walkout, strike while the iron is hot. Da-dum-bump. Anyway, let's see. What did I call?
Well, you know, that was then there was the slogan of the Meat Grinders Union.
Okay.
Don't back up. You might get a little behind in your work.
Oh well, yes, of course. And the USDA frowns upon that. 90.1 FM in Washington, D.C. Do you know what that station is now and used to be?
No, fill us in.
That used to be the Georgetown University campus radio station. Had a monster signal on FM, and you could pick it up clearly as far north as the southern part of Delaware. So that gives you a rough idea. I forget how much wattage they were running. But then... the Jesuits who ran Georgetown University got very angry with it was community underground programming, very radical stuff for the early 70s. And I was a part of that madness. I used to run the board every Saturday for the Stonewall Nation Media Collective's weekly program called Friends. And it was in the early 70s, and it was probably one of the earliest or one of the first gay-themed radio programs in America. And I was the board op for that. And that was one of the things that bugged the hell out of the Jesuits. The Georgetown University campus radio station, which had a sizable signal, they didn't want that and feminists and radicals and, you know the type that many of us were back in those days. They just didn't want us on there. So they sold the license for a dollar to another D.C. College. And then later, about 10 years later, C-SPAN bought it.
I was going to guess it was now WAMU.
No, that's a little further down the dial, 88.5 or 3 or 7, something like that. But yeah, so that station has had a long storied history. I mention all that because the name of the program, as I said, was Friends, and our theme song was sung by Bette Midler. It was a cut from her album, I think her first album, since you had mentioned old Bette earlier. And I hope she was sincere in her apology, and I hope she doesn't have to spend too much time in the old penalty box. Because we,
if she wants West Virginia to have better representation, you know what would be a great way to have that happen?
Find a candidate and then campaign like the Dickens.
No. In her case, write a check.
Well, yeah. And she could.
I mean, there are people out there with spaceship money who are liberal and progressive, and if they really wanted to turn West Virginia blue, they could.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a matter of having the want to for it.
And I think she's a bright enough individual that, you know, if you pound something out on the grand keyboard of life before you've given it some thought, which is what it sounds like she did. She typed first and thought second, and not until she was called out. And I understand.
Poor, illiterate, and strung out.
Yeah, well, that in today's America, that could be any place.
Well, that's the thing. That could be New Hampshire. That could be Massachusetts. That could be Vermont. Sorry, not picking on New England. Alabama. It's not like California and other progressive states don't have drug problems. But we get picked on.
Yeah.
You know, Annette, bless her heart, is she does. She tends to hold a grudge and. She's in good company.
Cleaning the shooting iron as we speak?
My father was the same way.
Yeah.
This is a little bit of a diversion, but, oh, by the way, you were talking about the Jesuits were real mad about there being a gay radio program at Georgetown's radio station. I can see where they might get a little bent out of shape because it used to be, it always got a good laugh at Jesuit meetings. Because the Jesuits would talk about how, you know, Polynesian cultures did not have a word in their language for homosexuality until the Jesuits got there.
Well, there you go.
And I mean, that's not a joke. That's a fact.
Yeah.
But my father would hold a grudge. My father never bought a Chevrolet because in, I think, 1948... the CEO of GM declared that the American working man was no better than a bird dog.
Say that again?
The CEO in 1948 of General Motors said the American working man was no better than a bird dog. And my father, from that day forward, as his act of protest and solidarity, said he would never purchase a General Motors vehicle.
Wonder who that was. Probably Alfred Sloan. I think he was.
I want to say that his last name was Wilson. If you look at look up GM CEO Bird Dog, and it'll probably pop.
I don't know what's with my computer. I have to. It goes to sleep, and then I have to log back in to wake it
up. But later on in life, and we will very probably be traveling this highway at one point in time, or later on here in a couple of days, when one gets to Elizabethtown, Kentucky on I-65, in order to get to Lexington, Kentucky, one then jumps on the Bluegrass Parkway. And once upon a time, that was a toll road. And it wasn't like there was any, and it was entirely automated. So you had to have change before you got on that toll road. And one of our trips, my father had, for some reason, didn't have change. You know, he had greenbacks. So he stopped at a little gas station in Versailles, Kentucky. Kentuckians will know exactly where I'm talking about. And he said, could you give me change for a couple of dollars? And the attendant there said, nope, sure can't. You ain't buying nothing, you ain't getting no change. And we're talking about maybe the late 60s, early 70s. For the rest of his life, my father, who had stopped there frequently over the years, never stopped at that place again. And so when Annette was talking about how disgusted she was with Bette Midler, I said, wait, you're sending Bette to that convenience store in Versailles, Kentucky, aren't you? And she said, you're damn right I am. And lo and behold, it took a while, but that convenience store in Versailles, Kentucky, by God, went out of business, and it does not exist anymore. So let that be a lesson to convenience store proprietors the world over.
Yeah.
But you know, I understand being frustrated with, and I fear that she's probably done something like that in her own right. But the fact of the matter is, Scott, where politics is concerned in states where people have no respect for the people, you get all kinds of stuff going on. It wasn't that long ago that a group from outside West Virginia who knew, you know, who didn't know left hand from Fraser's bottom, those are two place names in West Virginia, by the way, came in with a fundraising idea and raised scads of money on a primary for Joe Manchin. But they never had a chance of winning. Ever. Not even a 1% chance. And that's how this shit tends to go in a place like West Virginia. There's an opposite phenomenon where, for instance, in races where you had a halfway decent chance of beating, say, an incumbent Kentucky senator, the party there nominated a candidate who vied with Mitch McConnell to see who could get their nose further up the coal industry's ass. And so it was Republican versus Republican light. And that was a few years ago. And that's never going to work. These things have to be organic. And they have to, and it's a matter of, and I'm certainly not an expert on this. I'm still learning. But it becomes a matter of trying to figure out how to talk to people, and as the saying goes, meet them where they are, instead of where you think they ought to be.
Yeah, but one of the primary things that one needs to converse with another person is a commonality of language and at least a minimal meeting of the minds. And therein lies the problem.
Yes.
Maybe 30 years ago, you could have such a conversation with someone you disagreed with politically. But in today's world, they don't even catch every third word. You know?
Right. And language in itself is a product of common agreement. Now, notwithstanding the silliness of that, and I mean, it's not silly, it's just a myth created by people who didn't understand why it rains and were baffled by wheelbarrows, but you mean we pick it up and we walk behind it and we push it and the wheel's going to roll? Right. You know, there was the myth of the Tower of Babel. Once upon a time, everybody spoke the same language. And then God got mad because they built a skyscraper. Actually, it was a ziggurat. Sometimes I still wish I could have a ziggurat.
Yeah, I'd walk a mile for a camel.
Yeah, I know. You saw it. You knew where I was going, didn't you?
Yes, I do. Wasn't that also a candy bar?
No, that's Zagnut. That's Zagnut.
I'm sorry, you.
But all kidding aside, you know there is an element of truth to it.
No, Zagnut was Blondie's husband.
No, that's Dagwood. Damn it.
Oh. Anyway, go ahead. Proceed.
You are so good at this.
Thank you.
But, for instance, there's at least one theory that says human speech may have arisen in what we now know as southern India, and that it was based upon humans imitating the noises the birds made, which I find fascinating. But language is a system that we mostly agree to the meaning of the noises that we make. If I say banana and you don't agree with me that a banana is what we understand as a banana, but you instead think of it as a socket wrench, we're not going to get very far in terms of communication. Because every time I say banana, you're going to think ratchet, and I'm going to be sitting there wishing I had some peanut butter. And you're wondering why I want peanut butter with a socket wrench.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about meeting people where we live, that's what we're talking. And the right wing has been such perverse geniuses. With going back to Newton Leroy Gangrene's war on words, in which he turned the Democratic Party into the Democrat Party to emphasize the word rat.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that a Frank Luntz creation?
Well, if it was in conjunction, because Newton Leroy Gangrene, amateur paleontologist, put out a memo and had a word list. Don't say this, say this.
Yeah.
Maybe he got it from Frank Luntz. I don't know. But, that's back in the mid to late 80s or the 90s or so.
Well, who was that guy who got brain cancer and died?
Lee Atwater.
It was probably Luntz or Atwater, now that I think about it.
Yeah, Atwater was so awful, his own brain rejected him.
Well, how do you proceed in a world where there's not at least minimal agreement on the nature of things, the meaning of things? This is what's the most frustrating thing to me.
That's what I was going at, Scott. If you and I say family values, well, you tell me, what does family values mean to you?
Decent food, decent housing.
Maslowian hierarchy of needs. Shelter, food.
Health care.
Yeah.
Leisure time.
Well, the devils of the right wing have changed that to make it mean heterosexuality with guns. And church.
And no taxes. And no regulation.
Right.
Yeah.
And it all falls tidily under that rubric. And so we're at the bananas and socket wrenches problem. And on our side what we do is we say, no. Family values means a roof over your head, clothing on your bodies, your children aren't screaming from hunger at night, you've got clean drinking water, you got clean air, it's safe to travel, blah, 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 blah. And you people don't understand, because you're illiterate and strung out. I mean, this, and I don't mean to make too much out of Bette Midler, but this is our problem. This is that thing we've discussed on this program for so long about, I don't understand why people vote against their own best interests. And that in itself is elitist snobbery. Because you've made a value judgment before you've made the inquiry. And over in Virginia, the exact same thing was at work in the election that put that freak Glenn Youngkin in the governor's office. He had scads of money from right wing hate groups, masquerading as religious organizations. And they made the central focus of his campaign parental choice.
Yeah.
Now, what is parental choice? Okay, let's do this. Let's play the game again. What does parental choice mean to you?
Well, I know what it means in their mind, but to me it means, parents should have some say into the.
And you raise your children the way you want them raised, and you go to whatever church you want to go to, and if they want to play softball or soccer or football or basketball, you know, that you make the final say as the parent, right? Or if you want, if you want to pay for them to go to private school where they can learn about when Lewis and Clark rode their goddamn dinosaurs to the Pacific coast, well, that's your right. Or you can homeschool them. That's parental choice. But by the time that campaign was said and done with, parental choice had taken on an entirely different meaning. And it meant making sure parents knew that Glenn Youngkin was going to be the person who would make sure that their children never had to hear about fire hoses being used on protesters in Selma or in Birmingham, or cops beating the life out of voting rights advocates in Selma, or you get the idea.
Yeah.
And also they went, you know, it also means parental choice, making sure that those uppity LGBTQIA pluses stay in the closet where they goddamn well belong.
And not masking kids or teachers. I mean, it's a whole,
anti-vax
John Mitchell call it the parade of horribles.
Yeah.
In terms of Watergate, it's a litany of just total nonsense that nobody is even talking about, but it's being force-fed by right-wing radio and right-wing television and these political action groups to these people who really should. I mean, I feel badly for the people in my home Commonwealth. It's not a state, but I call it my home state. They should know better. They, honest to God, should know better. Now, I wasn't a stellar student back when I was in grade school and high school, and that's as far as I got. I never had higher education. I couldn't turn another page in another book. I was so tired of it and wanted to get out and see what the world was all about. So I wasn't a stellar student, you know, but at least I got basics that were reliable and had been reliable for years, and a good dose of common sense and, you know, left-wing ideology in
right,
the mix.
Because there was a decent amount of common agreement that there were some things that young Scott needed to know before he left 12th grade.
Yeah, and I by God, got them. In some classes, by the skin of my teeth, you know, or the hair on my little chinny chin, but I got them. And I was put in good stead by what little education I did get, and the fact that I always, even the people I didn't agree with, I always looked at the other person's situation before making some sort of final judgment on something. Empathy, I think they call that, or having a wider world view, not whiter, but wider,
broader,
world view.
Broader.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and social activism besides, even as a kid, anti-war, civil rights things, helping black people get jobs for the white-owned cab companies, you know. And it wasn't earth-shattering. I'm not going to win a prize, but it was a thing of being part of a solution as opposed to being part of a problem, like that old saying goes. And these people are not, they can't be that.
But Scott, look at what you just described. You just described civic activism and civic awareness.
Yeah.
And look where it took you.
Where?
Damn sure took you somewhere you could never be a goddamn Republican, didn't it?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that shit's got to go.
Because just as a human being, leaving politics out of it, I can't subscribe to that case of particulars, that bill of particulars, that's currently representing the Republican mindset and platform. I mean, it's just not within my capability to fall into that madness. And maybe that's a highly charged word. I don't think they're mad. I think they're angry. I think most of them are perfectly sane. I just think they've taken too many of uninformed steps along the way, just to put it in the kindest light.
Too many rhetorical blows to the head?
Well, that could be too. And they're not paying attention. I mean, every now and again, I will look to see what the other side is saying. Okay? We don't get that same degree of respect or interest from the other side.
No, because there's no winning in that. The win is whatever it is we say, it's communism. I wish I could run the audio right now, but it would take too long to dig it up and might even screw up the stream at this point. I'm a little paranoid. I saw a clip over on my Twitter feed, and I want to think it was. Let me look here, see if it'll load. I want to think it was maybe CNN. And this will take me a second. Do you remember Mia Love? She was ever so briefly a member of Congress.
Yeah, I remember the name.
Okay, so Frank sent along a clip from CNN of Joe Kennedy. Well, I guess he's the third.
This is not the anti-vaxxer.
No, that's Bobby Jr.
Oh, okay.
And we got him in the stack too. He's been belly aching lately. He begged Jake Tapper to debate him, and Jake Tapper said, "Oh, fuck off."
Good for him.
He didn't say "oh, fuck off," but that was the way I translated it.
Intercourse thyself out of my proximity.
Right. Oh, copulate you. So whoever this talking head is on CNN had Mia Love, and I guess Mia Love's been hired by CNN to periodically give her opinion, and Joe Kennedy III, and they were discussing Joe Manchin, of course, and West Virginia. And so from the left, ostensibly, Joe Kennedy says blah blah blah. West Virginians need good health care. West Virginians need good paying, decent jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And then Mia Love, you know what? This might actually work because of the way the microphone that I'm using right now. This might actually work.
I've got everything crossed. That's crossed.
This is beautiful. Stand by.
Okay. So what was going on in Virginia? So I think that.
Okay, hold on.
It's a union representing coal miners says they want him to reconsider his opposition to Build Back Better. Joe Manchin marches to his own tune. Do you think that could make a difference?
Look, I think any constituency from within West Virginia that is going to raise their voice about this is going to matter, because Senator Manchin, it matters. Congresswoman Love and I think would say the same thing. When your constituents are chiming in on an issue, it matters, right? Of course it does. It matters an awful lot more than, you know, some interest group from across the country that you don't represent, you weren't elected to represent, and that doesn't have any leverage over how you're going to vote.
Did that come through at all?
Yeah, I heard it fine. Okay. It was a little tinny, but it was
so. There's a caveat here. Unless it's ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is nowhere near West Virginia, Joe pays a lot of attention to them. But the giant Moran Monday, Titanic Tuesday, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Fuckery from Republican Mia Love is about to happen.
Home state, your home communities, your constituencies is something very different. And obviously for a community like the coal miners in West Virginia that have such a deep legacy in that state and that affiliation with Senator Manchin that he, I think, is quite proud of, putting forward the fact that he will always try to speak for the people of West Virginia, when you hear loud and clearly constituencies like the coal miners saying, "Hey, if you're going to do that, we want you to change your vote," I think that matters.
Yeah, sorry.
But remember, this is Virginia. Remember what happened with Youngkin and the fact that he was able to win and the way that he...
You got that?
Yeah.
Kennedy just talked about Joe Manchin from West Virginia, and this goddamn genius, Mia Love, says, "But you have to remember, this is Virginia."
No, it was 150 years ago.
158 years ago.
Okay.
Well, the state of West Virginia is precisely 100 years older than me. Yeah. But
so she didn't even know. She didn't even know where the people having the conversation are located.
She doesn't. She doesn't think there's a West Virginia. She thinks West Virginia is a region of Virginia. I mean, this is the ultimate "you've got an aunt in Roanoke" moment.
Yeah.
Because, you know, down here, I can, if I see someone, well, man, where are you from? Well, I live in West Virginia. You know, I got an aunt in Roanoke. I'm not kidding. I think it's some sort of hang up it's some sort of transgenerational hang up from that dust up between the states, where they refuse to acknowledge West Virginia's existence because West Virginia seceded from Virginia. Because West Virginia wanted to be a free state and entered the Union as a free state.
There was a lot of seceding going on back then, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, a whole lot of seceding going on. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
And this is the idiocy of it, Robin. There are people today who would be happy as clams for a couple of these states to secede from the currently constituted United States.
Yes.
It's really kind of crazy. You know, you look at the old, I've been punching in this old time clock for many years, and honest to God, once upon a time, I thought that by the time I reached this age, if I ever did, that we'd be further along in terms of progress and have behind us, way back in the rearview mirror, a lot of these situations. But it seems like in some cases we're losing ground. At least in the terms of the conversation, we cannot even have, like we were talking about before. I don't even speak to my younger brother anymore, because in order to do so, I've got to go through the conversational
and grind a few molars down to dust. Yes.
Yeah. Before we can talk about, well, how you been, politics notwithstanding, you know. And that's sad when it gets to that point. But he's he and I'm I, okay?
Right, and we are smack dab in the middle of the single most familially traumatic time of year. You know, never mind Johnny Mathis singing "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year." There's a lot of people in this country, Scott, for whom this is the absolute drop-dead worst time of the year.
Oh, I know. Oh, and speaking of
crazy old Uncle Mag is down at the end of the table, barking and grunting and hooting, and he's 2/3 of the way through his bottle of old Panther piss before dinner's even on the table, and he's screaming about Joe Biden being a communist, and how Fauci paid the Chinese to go out and catch bats and let them piss on pangolins, and then created it in a lab. And
I meant to mention this earlier, and you jogged my mind when you were talking about the worst time of the year. I can't tell you how horrible I feel hearing Steve in New York's situation.
Broke my heart. Just devastated.
I mean, not just the fact that the visit to his partner is kiboshed 2 years in a row now, but he's got the COVID, and I know he's a responsible human being and has gotten all of his shots and boosters and stuff, but still, it's just not right.
No, it's not.
It's just fucking not right. And I don't, you know, if there's anybody in charge, you know, like AKA the man upstairs, if there's anybody fucking cosmically in charge, I don't approve of that situation.
No.
I
object.
I object strongly and loudly and firmly and resolutely.
When I got to it just broke my heart. It absolutely did. And again, for the same reasons, but I don't care. I do care. What I'm trying to get at is that, you know, it's COVID. And there's no such thing as I'm really, really fretful about this thing that's going around. Well, you know, Omicron's going to be a mild version.
Nope. I'll tell you what. Do you know where I'll be at 10 o'clock tonight?
Where?
At the CVS getting my booster.
Attaboy.
And I continue to wear my mask. I mean, the whole time the AT&T tech was here the other day, I had my mask on. I'm not taking any undue chances because, and I think I said this a long time ago, well over a year ago, the end, you talk about the light at the end of the tunnel vis-a-vis Vietnam. Those of you old enough will remember that conversation. We're not going to see any reliably discernible light of any permanence with this. Well, it's not a pandemic, it's an endemic, but it could just as easily turn around and be a pandemic again a week from next Wednesday.
Right, because nature bats last.
Well, not only that, but there are willful idiots. There are perpetual three-year-olds who say, I don't want to and you can't make me.
Yes.
No matter what good fucking science and medicine and intelligence you put on their little plate, they take their little forearm and sweep it off the high chair platform where the food normally sits. And they're babies. And this is nothing against babies. Some of them are really cute and cuddly.
I was one once.
They're just little pant-loaded babies. And I am so sick of the world being run by babies. Little teeny whiny pissy pants babies. That
mewling and puking in its mother's arms.
I just, you know.
Mother Trump.
I would like to take the swaddling clothes that Jesus wore and just wrap them around their head a la mummy style, most of them.
Going from swaddling clothes to strangling clothes.
Well, there you go. Away in the manger and away with you, motherfucker. I'm just so fucking tired of these people, you know, fucking things up. For you and fucking things up for me and fucking things up for people within the sound of my voice, and especially fucking things up
for my friend
Steve.
Exactly. And, you know, Jeremy in Vermont just said, I object bigly to what has happened to Steve, only the best words and people. Yeah. I mean, I think all of our hearts are going out. There's so much frustration and so much angst, and there has to be fear, and I can't stand it. It just breaks my heart because this is family. And frankly, you know, Omicron exists because everybody didn't get vaccinated. It is not the fault of the vaccinated that we have Omicron, God damn it. But remember, since you mentioned swaddling clothes, in the lyric to the Christmas carol, a holy infant so tender and mild, there's a logical progression there. The existence of an infant who is tender and mild implies that there was one that was chewy and spicy.
Well, that too, yes.
Yeah.
That too.
And then there's the round young virgin. I mean, well, I don't know why every year we fat shame Mary, but we do.
Well, round yon virgin.
No, round young virgin. That's.
I thought it was.
Oh, work with me here. You're usually good with comedy.
I'm sorry. I guess it's my, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. But it's so, you know, when we talk about these things, it's so frustrating. And I'm going to go ahead and make a little announcement here.
Uh-oh. Is this a good announcement?
I hope it will be.
Oh, okay.
There is a strong chance that coming up here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to get some paperwork. And I thought you were giving me the stink eye. Oh, okay. I'm running for office.
Wow.
Giving you the stink eye.
Yeah. There is not a single trans member of the West Virginia legislature. And the person who is presently my member of the House of Delegates is the single most hateful anti-LGBTQIA plus community bigot.
You forgot odious.
In the state of West Virginia, in the entire legislature. And so I've been talking to some people, and they seem to think it would be a good idea, and I think it would be a good idea to run for that seat.
How long has he or she occupied that chair?
Oh, 3 or 4 terms at the very least.
2 years or 4 years?
2 year terms.
Yeah, I think it's time for a fresh breeze of reality and decency to blow through the legislature. I mean, I've never lived there, but I read.
it's a matter of trying to put my principles on the road next to my feet, and trying to walk the walk as well as talk it.
And I believe the people of West Virginia in that district, I don't know how big a geographic space it is or what it represents numerically, but I would think there are people who are fans of decency and kindness and understanding and acceptance and believers in a world big enough for every responsible human being. And God knows you could give a speech to inspire folks to, you know, people who walk by the light, if they can see the light, and they see the light by hearing that there is, in fact, something, an alternative to darkness. You know?
Right.
Well, you could have quizzed me earlier today and said, what do you think Robin's going to do? I wouldn't have said that. But that's...
It's important that I work through this process of trying to figure out how to meet people where they are and how to carry on this conversation.
Well, yeah, it becomes urgent. But you bring something to the party that, and by party I don't mean the political group, I mean the party called Life.
Yeah.
You bring a unique perspective, unique in some ways, but very relatable in other ways, to the constituency that you hope to serve.
I hope so. I mean, already I'm the first trans woman to sit on a county Democratic or county political executive committee of either party. Or any party, I think. And so why not take the next step?
How is the participation in terms of voter turnout, eligible versus ones who bother to show up, in your district specifically and West Virginia?
It could be better, and as is everywhere else. It's better in presidential election years than midterms. I've seen some really crummy low voter turnouts in primaries. I've seen like 33% turnout for primaries. So that means that, you know, whoever gets in that instance, you know, 50% plus one of 33% gets the party's nomination.
And see, every cycle that dipshits are elected, and I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, but let's face it, in 2016, on the presidential level...
And in my case, don't brush the broad.
No. Well, you know what I mean. But I'm saying...
That's a joke.
It's like it's an eroding effect on people when the time after time, it's almost a chicken-egg thing. Which happens first, the voter apathy and inaction... Or the crummy people who are elected, and participation is a key thing in a living, breathing democracy. And we cannot lose sight of that. And I'm afraid people have been so fucking demoralized over the years in a lot of places that they think, what's the use? It's like pressing the walk, don't walk button at the major intersection in the big city. Some people believe that has an effect. I don't, personally. I think it gives me something
to do. Oh, wait. Are you one of those people who thinks that the closed door button in an elevator is merely a toy?
It's an ornamentation. It's something to convey an impression that's not based in any fucking reality that I know. But I'm saying, in terms of voting, people can get to a point, and we've seen this over the years, they get to the point they figure, what's the fucking use? You know? And once you're there, all manner of bad shit can happen. You know? Yeah. Hell, I don't need to tell you.
No, I get it. I really, really in for truth get it.
Here's something I want to know. This is a theological question.
Oh, dear.
When Jesus said, in my Father's house, there are many mansions, he was talking about buildings. He wasn't talking about your senator, was he?
No, because none of them have gotten there yet.
Well, that's what I mean. How is that even possible?
I need to send out a quick thank you. Thank you so much to our pal, Will, formerly of Chicago. We're down to $14.50 to go now in fundraising, and I can't tell you how helpful and important that was, Will. And gosh, I hope you get some friends so that you're not the only one standing there at the end of the program. Thank you, Will. Thank you so much. And I hope you had a blessed Hanukkah, and that your new year, at least the secular one, is every bit as full of sweetness as Rosh Hashanah. So thank you, Will. Thank you so very much. And if we could knock down, I mean, and I'd be, you know, I'm loath to even talk about this, Scott. I am, but it's been a rough couple of months simply because, you know, just trying to keep up, especially with me not being consistently on the air, and that's my fault if we're going to assign fault. But no, I've been waiting and trying to figure, and I figured, yeah, what the hell? Let's go ahead and make mention of that, because, I mean, is there a better, and I'd have to win the primary first, but is there a better light against darkness choice than somebody who wants a West Virginia for all, that's good for all West Virginians, versus somebody who thinks that a significant portion of the population of West Virginia is going to hell?
Well, it you know, who is it? The Christophers, the religious group, the Christophers. It's better to light one candle than to curse darkness.
Right.
You know, I mean, it.
Yeah. Well, they never burnt their finger. They never burnt their finger trying to light the candle.
Well, there's that, and I think it's a step in the right direction, and it. Who knows? It. You got better courage than I do.
In my case, it was also born of the fact that the last year has taught me so much about the essential goodness of the people where I live. Because as I've said before, I had no idea at the time. I was terrified, but I could not have picked a better place to come out and to transition than right there in Fayette County, West Virginia. I've been received warmly and sweetly and kindly, and have had almost no negative impacts whatsoever. And I get misgendered a hell of a lot less up there than I do down here, even though there's a great deal of similarity between, because this is Appalachia too.
Yeah.
But what a difference. It's 400 miles, a little over 400 miles as the crow flies. But it's closer to 600 miles as you drive it. But the difference could not be more stark. That is not to say I don't love it down here. I do, because this is where I was born and raised. And there's something special about that, wherever you're from. But, you know, I want an opportunity to praise that goodness and to talk about how we can fill a future with that goodness. And what we need to do to make the future that good and that kind and that decent.
Well, it's a matter of conveying the notion that we're all in this life and this world and this neighborhood and this county and this district together. And, you know, it's a worthy thing to do, and I commend you if you end up going that way. Speaking of going that way, I've got one more thing. I see the clock on the wall. From time to time, I listen to Mark Maron's biweekly podcast interview programs.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Huh?
He's brilliant. One of the best interviewers out there, period, bar none.
He's coming to San Diego in late February to a venue, a 3-minute bus ride from my house, and I can afford the ticket, but I'm afraid to go.
Because of COVID.
Because of COVID, yes. Over a year, going on 2 years, you have heard me and my stay-in-ness.
Yeah, you have caved up.
Well, and I have, and it's not that I don't want to go out.
No, but
it's
you are alive to tell the tale and wonder the wonder.
Well, but here's the deal. I would, because I missed him last time, about 3 or 4 years ago, when he was at a venue downtown. But this is in my neighborhood. This is like almost under the North Park sign on University Avenue at the corner of University and 30th. This is my fucking neighborhood. And I, Billable Rick, I posted about it on Facebook, saying initially that I wasn't going to go. I may go. It's just that I will be very nervous in a crowd because it's not a big venue. And he always, you know, there are two shows and one of them's already sold out. It's February 22nd, I think it is. And I really want to go. But then again, Robin, they're going to check your credentials at the door. Yeah, you got to be masked. Yeah, you got to be vaxxed. But I'm thinking too soon. You know, it's going to be too soon.
And I don't think you're being a nervous Nelly for doing that either.
Well, I don't either. I just, as much as I would like to see Maron.
The fact of the matter is, you would. But great big COVID crockpots are not the way to go. It's one of the things that I don't mean to be self-contradictory in this, but it's kind of bad news that they're saying that one of the unique factors about Omicron is that you don't lose your sense of taste and smell, because that was the dead giveaway that, ooh, I've got the Rona. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's the virus protecting its viability.
I think it's more like the Rona protecting its brand. You know, did you lose your sense of taste and smell? You've got the Rona. But with that having been said, this means that people can think, oh, you know, I got me winter cold. It ain't or in the case of those assholes in Dallas, I ain't got the Rona. I got the anthrax. We've been attacked with the anthrax. That's what it is. Somebody tell you. And I found out something. Did you know that ivermectin horse paste comes in it has flavor?
Does it have red and white stripes like that toothpaste that they used to?
I actually saw a post where a guy said, yeah, I'm on the ivermectin. Well, did it taste that? No, it was apple flavor, because of course it's horse paste. Of course it's going to be apple flavor. You know, not a joke. But the thing is, you know, Omicron, you know, we talked about this, especially with Paul from Parts Unknown. And I would love to hear from him now that we know a little bit more about Omicron. You know, viruses science doesn't even necessarily classify them as alive. They're quasi-alive. They're particles. But they are still evolutionary beings, or evolutionary particles or things. And so it stands to reason
that if a virus kills too much of its host, it will eventually burn itself out and kill itself. At least in an era of modern science. But if it evolves and mutates so that it doesn't make you quite so sick, then it gets to stick around.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you can be, and you know, this is, and the anti-vaxxers are such a weird lot, Scott. You know, see, I mean, it just proves that vaccine ain't worth nothing. No, it doesn't, because dead vaccinated bodies aren't piling up in refrigerator trucks, okay? But mask and everything that we've learned to do to protect ourselves may not necessarily be enough. So, you know, if you don't want to sit around in a room full of people and consider the ballistic nature of laughter.
Oh, yeah.
If there's going to be laughter involved.
And clapping is like little wind machines all seated in rows.
Let's just, you know, let's just fan them around a little bit.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I think I
wouldn't if I were you. And I know you didn't ask for my advice, but I wouldn't.
No, but I'm pretty much like 98% not going to go. Because I don't see this situation changing for the better between now and the end of February. We're talking, what, 2 months? February 22nd? Yeah, 2 months.
Yeah, it's supposed to spike and fall off. But you know, 2 months is a long time for us to get to the Mu, Nu, Omicron, Pi. Yeah, so Pi, Mu, Nu, Omicron, Pi, Rho, Sigma. You know, shit, which, who knows which, hell, we may be into cuneiform letters by then. You know, at some point in time, it's going to be a real pain in the ass when we have to go to linear, Minoan linear A, because we've run out of known languages. It's like George Carlin saying, mathematicians have discovered a new number. It's called Blean, and it happens between 6 and 7. What a genius. You can't plan. You can't, and I mean, and any, if you say something like, well, you know, it'll be over by then, no.
Oh, I have no illusion about that.
Maybe if it was at an outdoor venue.
Yeah, oh, that'd be different. But this is a 1930s era theater, which hasn't shown movies for like 20, 30, 40
that's
years,
a big no.
Which is an entertainment venue now.
Yeah, no. No, and I have to send out some more thanks. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy in Vermont. 10 for the show and 10 for your run. Break their legs, not yours. I'm not fundraising because it's not a campaign yet. And that'll be an entirely separate animal. But thank you, Jeremy, and thank you so very kindly to Ralphs. So that gets us down to, and then Jude jumped in. And taken together, we are now down to 1355 to try to catch up. It's wonderful. Thank you all so much. Got some notes, Scott, Dave in the Blind saying, run, damn it. Don in West Tennistan said, it's about time you have my complete support, though I'm in West Tennistan. I cannot thank you enough. And I've been thinking about this for a while and talking about this for a while, and I'm excited by the possibility. I want to do some good. And Ralph's sending out big hugs to Steve in New York. Huge hugs to Steve in New York. This is what I love about our community. It really is a real and caring and concerned group, and you know, thank you all for your kind thoughts toward our dear friend Steve. There's no room for error, and there's no guarantees. I hate the fact that this is a milder version of bullshit, because you know, what was it, late last week?
We had the one news story saying that the researcher from Imperial College in London said, there's nothing to support the idea that this is milder.
Well, it has developed the time frame in which it has become known. There's hasn't really been enough time to first of all figure out its structure, okay, and how it differs from the previous incarnations of the virus. But more importantly, we'll have a nice big craft test kitchen to find out what it's doing to people who are not vaccinated. Okay, because that primarily it's hitting the people who it's affecting more profoundly the people who are not vaccinated and are not wearing a mask and not social distancing. We have yet to discover what, if any, effect it's having on. See, because the vaccines don't keep you from acquiring the virus. This is how it's different from other vaccines. What the vaccines do is keep it from attaching in such a way to do very
right,
deadly damage.
So it can still bounce around like a little pinball.
Yeah, and we don't fully. It hasn't been long enough with this current variant to figure out what the impact is ultimately going to be. You know, so no, we're the light at the end of the tunnel is it's reflecting off of your eyeglasses or something. There ain't no light down there yet, and we're not likely to see a light at the end of the tunnel. That's not an oncoming train. For a good long while to come, I think. And I'm not a fucking doctor, but I know enough to know that.
No, but that's a reasonable layperson's assessment of the situation.
You know, and I'm not giving medical advice or you know, behavior advice because I'm not qualified to do that. But on the other hand, I'm not out there banging an old frying pan, you know, with my stars and bars on my T-shirt. You know, and no mask and no social distancing, singing the praises of Trump and saying, there ain't nothing to it. Well, there's way more to it than you maybe can grasp, Cletus, or whoever you are, you know, with your Trump hat on backwards or something. Or maybe your head's on backwards. The hat is right.
There are more things in heaven and earth, Emery, than are dreamt of in your MAGA philosophies.
Well, that too. So I don't know. I just... I'm sure at one of these venues they're going to record it, and it'll be on one of the streaming channels. And I can sit here naked if I want without a mask. You know, you talk about naked radio.
Can you sit there naked if we don't? Can you sit there not naked if we don't want you to?
Well, yeah. Well, I you know, I'm. If you want to cast a vote on nude or not nude, send $5 to the Horn. And then cast your vote. And that way we can raise a few bucks and we can get some
God
clothes
almighty.
On.
Now, there's a whole new take on a poll tax.
Well, that. Anyway.
Oh, you should see the look I just got from Annette. She said that was just wrong.
Well, it's a poll. I wouldn't go so far. Well, I'm not going to go there, but...
Well, that's okay. The other day, when was it? Yesterday, maybe, or day before, when I was talking about the idiocy of Joe Manchin, and him, because that one just this there's some of these stupid things he says that just get on me like poison ivy, and you know, there's no getting around the itching or the scratching. But he said, you know, maybe they think they can just shove somebody around. It's just one senator, and they can bring a lot of pressure to bear from protesters and stuff. But I'm not that kind of person. I'm from West Virginia, and we're not like those people.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. He's one guy telling the rest of his party in the Senate and the rest of the country, no.
But I, in the course of talking about that, and I don't.
Isn't that pushing and shoving of a different type?
Yeah, it is. It's bully behavior. But what I said, and I was kind of proud of it at the time, I said, you know, part of the purpose of this program, even though it's a, does not have the reach of, you know, some big time for profit media, is that, you know, we can learn things and we can push back when we hear things that we know to be wrong. And I said, so, you know, this represents an opportunity to interdict Joe Manchin saying what a real West Virginian is. And then I noted, I don't know if I'm even allowed to use that word anymore. Interdict.
Interdict, yes. Well, there's another word I'm sure that you could use.
And I'm not gonna. I know the word.
I'm not going to either. Isn't that a refreshing change of pace? See, I know that Santa's visit is only less than 2 days away, and he sees me when I'm sleeping. He knows if I've been bad or good, all that shit. And I'm not going to risk it, because I want Santa to bring me lots of toys and goodies in his sleigh, as the old song goes.
Well, I saw our dear. I saw a post. I think it was our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor, who said he changed the lyric. He sees you when you're drinking. He knows when you are smashed. No, he sees you when you're drinking. He knows when you're passed out. He knows if you've been bad or good, and he might just bring you gout.
Oh Lord, gout! I don't need no gout. Jesus. Well, so. I don't want nothing on. I don't want nothing for Christmas except for people to be kind to one another and pause before speaking, and you know, just stop. You know, don't be mean.
No. And you know, be kind to little kitty cats and little doggies and birds and bugs and butterflies and beetles. And well, speaking of which, I did watch all three segments, all 8 hours of the Beatles Get Back.
Oh, what is that on? Is that Disney or?
Yeah,
Paramount
Disney Plus.
Or?
It's on Disney Plus.
I don't have that.
And it was, I loved it, but by the same token, you know, they cut it down to 8 hours from 60. And I do not envy whoever it was that had the job of editing that. You know, what to keep, what to drop, what to keep. But to go through that, because it... where's that? What does that line come from? Ponderous, man, ponderous.
Oh, that's Casey Kasem and the long-distance dead dog dedication.
Yeah. That's what it was. Thank you. It's been bothering me for... Because it's kind of ponderous.
So it's 6 hours on Disney, 8 hours on Disney, but if there's a director's cut for home video, it could be a third again as long.
I would kind of doubt it, simply because Peter Jackson got the permission from you know, the remaining Beatles estate holders to do this. And yeah, if they turn out all 60, it'll be for a pretty
well, no, I don't mean all 60 hours of footage. I mean, but there ought to be a director's cut for home video, the home video market. I would certainly buy that.
But it was sweet to a certain extent, because you know, the original footage was what became the Let It Be film, and it was cut in a way that it seemed like it was very bitter. Yeah. Like they were constantly at each other's throats. They weren't. They were clowning around and having fun, and there was a little bit of a family bust up and a little bit of a tantrum. And probably the most seminal moment of the whole thing is where after George has walked out and said he's quit the band,
the camera's rolling, Paul just said, you know, I can just see this, people watching this 50 years from now, saying, oh my God, the Beatles broke up because Yoko sat on an amp. And he, you know, he turned out to have a certain prophetic quality in that regard.
Well,
and for the fan and for people who are fans, rest assured, there is some yokodling in this. That's Yoko yodeling, yokodling.
Well, here's my question: I've heard Yoko sing, and I've heard the sound that an amp makes when you sit on it. I defy you to tell me which is which. You know, this is one of those live or Memorex sorts of blindfold hearing tests. She's not melodious. That's all I'm trying to say.
What a euphonious Appalachian flower bell.
I've heard bad breaks on Buicks make a more melodious.
Wait, bad breaks on Buicks? Is that anything like white punks on dope?
Yeah, and that's what's wrong. That's what's wrong with our country. You got people strung out. And you got people
poor, illiterate, strung out with bad breaks on Buicks.
Yeah.
Thank God for you. You are the wind beneath my wings.
Well, it's brakes, double A MCO. Get down there and get them puppies reading.
Double A, MCO.
Whatever, speaking of old radio commercials, whatever happened to We'll Leave the Light On You guy? The light on for
Tom
you.
Baudet? Tom, I don't know. But I got one for you. I actually thought of you the other day. We were driving into town, and we were listening to the radio station that I used to work for. And they've got the most eclectic mix you've ever heard in your life. I mean, you can hear We Are Family, backed with Back in Black. Followed by Johnny Mathis singing It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year. I'm not kidding. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's like waiting for the acid to kick in. But the ads. I mean, I love me some local small market radio ads. And this is true, and I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad or anything, but have you ever written ad copy, Scott?
A little bit.
Okay, so you know, you write the ad copy, and you go in the production room, and you cut the ad, and you know, and so this was for a, and bless their hearts, you know, they must be a pretty solid going concern, and you know, the salesperson goes out and they've got their little pad, and they write down all the stuff about the business that's going to go into the ad, and in this case, it's a restaurant, and it's a Mexican restaurant called La Hacienda, which is apparently run by a guy named H-U-G-O, which I'm pretty sure is pronounced Ugo, not Hugo, but around these parts it's Hugo. And so we are told about Hugo and his hardworking staff who worked so hard to craft fine Mexican food for the fine folks of the Shoals. And I'm not making fun yet. Because, Scott, you'll appreciate this so much. The way the guy cut the ad, he's got a beautiful announce voice, and it's one of those small market radio ads. You know what they sound like. Come on down to La Hacienda. They're just waiting for you. Yeah. And I tell you what, when you tie into Hugo's fajitas, my goodness gracious, they come to the table, and they're spicy and sizzling, and they smell. And he punches the word smell. And then there's like a three beat pause, and they smell dot 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 so good.
Yeah, I think.
And I've heard that ad four or five times since I've been here. It's just not all right. It's like, has Hugo heard this ad? What are you saying about my fajitas, man?
Feet smell, fajitas have a delectable aroma.
Aroma, yes.
It's like the difference between odor and aroma.
Yeah.
And they smell.
Rewrite. I want rewrite. Yeah, the smell is not, you don't want smell in a restaurant ad. I don't care what they're cooking. You know, smell is not, that's like.
And like, Annette heard it, and I heard it, and we looked at each other. You know, we've had some good laughs.
And this is regarding the fajitas, right?
Yes.
The fajitas smell. Well, if you're only half listening,
like, down I ain't ordering them damn fajitas.
Our feet smell. Wait a minute.
And then there's another one though. There's a local fried chicken place, and if I was going to be here long enough, I would go over and try it just because the ad copy's so engaging. Chappie's Fried Chicken on 2nd Street in Muscle Shoals.
Hmm.
Balloons for the kids.
Is it run by Pappy Chappie, or was it founded by Pappy Chappie?
You know what? There's nothing better at the holidays than Chappie's Fried Chicken. Come on over to Chappie's and get yourself a gift certificate and give them to your friends this holiday season. That's right. There's nothing that says Christmas like giving your friends the bird from Chappie's.
Well, I like that. That's a nice play on words.
Yeah.
But you got Pappy Chappie who founded the place.
And Chappie's chicken smells. So.
No. God, get this. There's a get your AP phrase book or whatever that thing was, or your copywriter's phrase book. There's another way to put that. And smell should never be
anywhere near a description of food.
Of a food item. I mean, unless it's like day old mackerel that's intended to be that way. I mean, no.
I mean, you don't even necessarily want to use the word smell as in, smell the delicious aroma of the barbecue. Smell it. No, you don't smell. You take in the wonderful hickory smoke.
The delectable aroma.
Yes.
Of Chappie's chicken.
Sizzling and spicy, and it smells.
Well, they ought to do a history of Chappie's chicken. You got Pappy Chappie, who started the place, then Chappie Jr. and his lovely wife, Chafee. You got Chappie, you got Chap, Chafe.
And then there's the other son who returned home from the military, having risen to officer status. That's Cappy Chappie.
Cappy Chappie.
And then there's the one they don't talk about who got caught out behind the dumpster by the local authorities, and that's Fappy Chappie.
Uh-oh. Damn. You got a regular little Peyton place going on down there. I missed out never having been to Alabama. I've been below the Mason-Dixon line, but not by much. The furthest south I've ever gone, I think, is either Richmond, Lynchburg, or Roanoke, whichever one is the furthest south.
Well, I mean, in terms of
that part of the world.
Roanoke's further south than Richmond. But I've observed the necessary obsequies for when I get here. I've had my barbecue. I've had my Dick Howell hot dogs. Second oldest barbecue joint, I think, in maybe North Alabama. I've had my pimento. I've got a load of pimento cheese spread to take home to at least get me into the new year with pimento cheese.
That's the caviar of the South, according to the guy on Breaking Bad, the Private Eye, Mike Ehrmantraut.
Yep. Everybody and their cousin has a favorite. This just happens to be mine because it comes from a little cafe on North Court Street that's been open since like 1917.
And didn't ABBA sing a song called Pimento?
No, I think that was Fernando.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a wonder
I
made it.
Can you smell the cheese, pimento? No. You know, you are really good at this freeform stuff.
I really can't get nothing straight anymore, Robin. I think it's the vaccine. The vaccine's done scrambled my brain.
Yeah, well, you know, you're human 2.0 now, and you hadn't said it, but I know you're standing there stuck to the refrigerator even as we're talking.
Well, no, the key in my back is stuck to the refrigerator. It just yanked it right out. I'm like fucking Mr. Machine by Ideal with a little plastic top hat. Wind him up and watch him go. Jesus. Well, did I ever tell you the time that...
No, go ahead.
I know time is running short, but I couldn't have been more than 7. We took the bus. Aunt Emma and I took the bus from Alexandria over to 12th and Pennsylvania, where the Trump Hotel is, where the buses... That's where the buses would congregate on the D.C. terminus of the buses in from Virginia. And she was in her 80s, and she didn't feel like walking 4 or 5 blocks up to, I guess, the Hecht Company, the big department store at 10th and G. So we took a cab. And the man driving the cab was fine, but there was a young woman or an older girl curled up next to him on the bench seat in the front. And we're sitting in the back, and Aunt Emma was kind of paranoid. And she gave me a look, and I gave her a look. And she thought that the man had kidnapped the girl or something. I don't know what she thought. She never was clear. But we got within a block of the Hecht Company, and she said, well, this will be all right. We'll get out here. And we waddled on into the store and made a beeline to the toy department and a visit to Old St. Nick. And I hadn't thought about that in years, and I don't know what made me think about it tonight. But it was just weird. You got to figure that was the kid's daughter, the man's daughter, who was going with him on his job. There was no babysitter, and she was taking a nap on the front seat. I mean, those taxi cabs in those days were huge. And this was before bucket seats in most cars. So that's what it was. But she, Aunt Emma, was convinced that mayhem would ensue if we spent another minute in that cab. So I don't know. Did I ever send you Aunt Effie's, her sister's pound cake recipe?
I don't think you did. We talked about it, but I don't think you did.
It was on my Facebook the other day. I'll copy it and send it to you, and you can make it for the once you get back to home base. You've got an oven that works, right?
Oh, yes.
Because I remember you used to didn't.
Yeah, no, we do. And, of course, one of the things that happened while we were down in Birmingham is turned out that the oven at the apartment was miswired.
Uh-oh.
And Annette electrocuted herself a couple of times.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, it turned out if you were touching the range part, like if you touch the oven door handle,
yeah,
and you touch the range hood, you know, with the blower and the light,
you completed the circuit. Oh God!
And
was she all right?
She did not like it. and so I called it in. And the woman who apparently owned the place showed up, and she's very Christian, very Karen, probably early 40s, drove a Jaguar F-Type SUV, and said, "Well, I'll send my electrician around. You know, he's one of those Latinos. You may have to use sign language."
Are you kidding me?
No, I don't make this shit up.
And this happened more than once where she got zapped?
Yes.
Well, thank God she didn't have them aluminum rheostat hair curlers in her hair.
God she didn't have them aluminum rheostat hair curlers in her hair, Scott says, honey.
The horn microphone would be draped in crepe. You know, God damn. Did they fix it?
He did, and that's the thing. When she told me that he was... The electrician was going. She said sign language. I was like, "What? I mean, are you going to spell agua into the palm of his hand? I'm not making fun here, but it's." But he shows up, And there's no language barrier at all, really. Oh. He's like, hello, hello. And, and you know, there were, there was no sign language. And he Annette explained herself, and he said, oh, we fix. Mama no get zap. No, no. What was it? Mama no get. Turn your mic on. Turn your mic on.
Mama no get zzz.
Turn your mic on. It's mic one.
Given that I can't hear anything, but Mama no get zzz. Nice guy. He was.
Hey.
Didn't like Karen.
What? I'm getting like Karen?
No, he didn't like Karen. That's the whole reason. He was just trying to figure out a way not to have to interact with her. No habla inglés.
Is Karen the lady with the jag?
She's a Karen.
Oh, a Karen. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
And she stood there. She stood there outside my door, which was closed, because
I had you in the room locked up.
We explained, you know, when we took the place that I would be recovering from surgery and trans, and we got the place, and it was nice, and I was back behind, the door was closed, and she stood there, this good Christian bleach blonde lady with the Jaguar F-type, she stood there outside my closed door, and Annette said she really, really wanted to open the door. And you're like, no, kitchen's in here. And so as we left on Monday, lo and behold, the battery was dead. And
oh,
so,
yeah, in the car.
Yeah, and so I called the, you know, for a jump. But that's when she, I'd never seen her before. That's when she pulled up in that Jaguar.
Took it up to the range.
Yeah. Yeah, just hook it. Why didn't you just hook it up to the range?
That's pretty much it.
Well, it was the lack of jumper cables, Scott. That was the whole.
Oh, well.
So, and I didn't know who she was, but she pulls up, and I jump out of the. No, not jump. I'm not doing any jumping these days. But I got out of the car, and I was going, "Hey," because I was going to say, "You got any jumper cables?" Because I mean, that's what we do back home. And I no sooner got "Hey" out. And she went, oh, hey, and turned on her heels and got away from me as fast as she could go. Would not look at Annette, you know, nothing. Yeah, it was.
Well, that's what's so wonderful about the South, that open, welcoming spirit that's so prevalent.
Bless your heart.
Jeez.
But that was the day after the evening. We had everything was all packed away, so I had to go just went a couple of blocks away to get a bite to eat. The kid was 21 years old. It was a miracle. And you know, I walk in and you know, I don't dress even androgynously anymore. And it's kind of hard to mistake me for a dude.
Unless you're just talking, and then...
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, I'm talking here. I'm not trying to modify my voice or anything. So, yeah. But I wasn't audio only when I walked into the restaurant. And looks at me. Can I help you, sir? Sir? Really? Sir?
Yeah.
Ma'am?
That's when you go ahead and see one of these.
Yeah, no. They still arrest you in Alabama for that, dear.
Roy Moore didn't get arrested, and he shows his.
Well, life. That's true, Roy. But then he was chasing Santa's little helper, and we all know they're imaginary.
Wow.
Did I lose you, Scott?
No, I'm.
Okay.
I just
you're just taking it all in. I understand.
I'm just, you know how I am. Pardon me.
But
well, you're going to be heading back what, Saturday?
We are leaving here Christmas morning, and going as far as I can stand to go. and then we'll get a motel and go the rest of the way. Or if it, the goal is to be home for Ferg's birthday.
Yeah.
Because yeah, the goal is to be as home as soon as possible. If I just feel fine as frog's hair, I'll make the whole trip in one day.
I may throw you in the back, drug you, and then take off down the road with you.
But I want us to be home on no later than Ferg's birthday, because he just he has worked his ass off while we've been gone, keeping the place running. And it's not easy to keep that ramshackle old farmhouse going. And it's kind of weird, Scott. We realized that this is the longest we have ever been away from our children in all the years we've been together.
Yeah, because you went down there like the first week in December, wasn't it? Or was it before that?
No, it was before that. We left West Virginia on November 1st.
First part of November.
First day of November. And then my surgery was 8 days later. And the rest of this time has been recuperation. And I'm glad to be at the point where I can finally get up and be around and be fairly mobile. I mean, you know, it ain't easy yet. But, you know, you were talking about lights in the distance. I can see it. And
I get your eagerness to be home again.
Hopefully, you know,
but don't push it.
No, I'm not. You know? But I can see the light in the distance, and I just hope it's not the headlamp of my gynecologist.
With that thing on his or her head.
Right, exactly.
That reflective.
Yeah.
The miner's helmet, whatever it is.
Yeah, so it's an old miner's carbide lamp.
Ah, God. I don't know. But yeah, don't push it.
And it smells so good.
Dot, dot, dot.
WNBC.
Yeah. Ponderous man.
And ponderous man, just ponderous. Which reminds me, if you watch all the way to the end of Howard Stern's Private Parts, the movie, you've seen
it. Oh, yeah. Kenny talking to himself on the street.
And, Pig Vomit winds up losing his job at WNBC in New York and winds up managing a mall
in
Florence, Mobile? Alabama.
Oh, Florence. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
I could almost throw a rock and hit that mall.
Well, don't hit Kenny. Kenny's dead. They killed Kenny. Anyway. Jesus.
Oh, we have taken this one around the block or two, a couple of times.
Well, I did I cover everything? Yeah, I guess I did.
We decided you're not.
You've had such a horrible week.
Oh.
With the gremlins in the gear. That it's. Well, hopefully the people out there in Radio Land got something out of it, because you know how I get. Fucking stream of consciousness. I'm liable to talk about anything before it's over.
And by the way, Steve had tried to ring in earlier, and I couldn't merge him into the call.
Oh, well, you should have let me go. I would have hung up.
Well, it takes too long to do that, he wrote and said, I forgot what I wanted to say, and also honestly, I'm exhausted emotionally and really physically too. All that waiting yesterday did it to me physically and mentally. I've been working all day, and reliving it all has just drained me. I'll try to be on the front porch. Also, I'm not sure I can hold back the tears and sobbing, which just breaks my heart. P.S., by the way, Casey Kasem said ponderous man. Fucking ponderous man. So even feeling unwell, Steve understands the priorities in life. Ponderous man. Fucking ponderous.
That's one of the great radio bits of all time.
And now we come to a long distance dedication.
About a
I don't know why we have to come in. I don't know why we have to come out of an up tempo song into a goddamn death dedication. it's not an unreasonable point to make.
And what about the pictures? Did Don get the pictures?
Get
Don on the phone.
And see, I think I, And I've actually thought about that line over the years, and I think he's talking about previews of movies. You know, because out there they refer to, at least for, there was a time when they were referred to as pictures. I don't think I don't think they were like pictures that he was supposed to autograph and send out or something.
I'll have to look that up. Or actually, I've got a friend on Facebook who's an authority. I actually worked with Kasem at one point years ago at some TV thing.
Get Don on the phone.
Get Don on the phone. Don Bustamante, I think the guy's name was. He was like his manager or assistant or the vice president of Watermark. I don't know what he did. He died a few years ago, I think. But anyway. My little dog Snuggles. Come out of these goddamn up tempo records. I'm trying to talk about a dead dog dying. Get Don on the phone.
Yeah, and Steve says, Scott will probably remember Don and Mike used to play that clip all the time in Washington. They were a comedy duo on WJFK in D.C. for the evening drive.
Yeah, Don and Mike, actually, the only time I got to hear them was when I was visiting, because I had left D.C. in the like 82. But I remember I was in an awful motel room. I think it was when my dad died and I was still married, and we got this little motel room, you know, where we were staying, because I was still a smoker and my mom wasn't smoking at that point, and she would rant and rave if I lit up anywhere near the property. So I said, fuck it, we're gonna stay in a cheap motel. And I remember listening to Don and Mike they were very funny. Very funny human beings. And not what you call politically correct, but goddamn they were funny.
They were rebroadcast in the Charleston, West Virginia market for a little while. And they were good. I think it was then.
Yeah, it had to have been. Because, yeah, they did syndicate at some point.
And then there was also the Broadbank Broadcasting Corporation.
Gary Burbank?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Help mom and them. I love good radio. Nothing like it. And it's totally different from the love that I have for small market local radio. But it's radio. It's magic. And of course, I deliberately did not do it to Annette when I did it when she was not in the car. What did you do? But I tuned in the Gospel Voice of Northwest Alabama.
Oh dear.
WBTG. We barely talk good. I don't think they've changed the music in 42 years. I'm pretty sure that if I called in and did the right voice, they would play Jesus is Jimmy for me.
Oh, no. Did they play the Blackwood Brothers?
Oh, yes. Oh,
I used to love the Blackwoods.
And they played the Oak Ridge Boys when, you know, before they went secular. You know, secular.
Wasn't that Trump's lawyer, Jay Sekular?
Yeah, Jay Sekular. Yep.
I don't know.
Well done.
Thank you. And the hits just keep on coming. Oh, Jesus. Do I really want to go out? Yes, I've got to go out. I hear the pitter-patter of rain on the the pipe that goes up from the wall, the gas furnace built into the wall, which I never use. So that means I get to run between the raindrops, Robin.
Walk between the raindrops. It's on Donald Fagan's The Night Fly.
I've got my duck umbrella, which was the first thing I bought when I moved to Kansas City. I needed an umbrella, and I've still got that damn thing. And you know how umbrellas are. they're almost as easily losable than gloves.
Or sunglasses.
But this is just a navy blue umbrella that collapses, but the handle, instead of being a curve, is the head of a duck. And I saw it in the store that later was bought up by Macy's in Kansas City. I forget the name of the store. I want to say it was, well, I don't know what I want to say it was because I don't remember. But it was one of the chains, that regional chains that Macy's acquired back in the 80s.
Yeah, I remember when they bought Kaufman's out of Pittsburgh.
But this duck umbrella I've had since early 1982, if you can believe that.
Wow.
So when I go out to catch the bus, the first of two buses, to go to get my injection tonight at CVS.
Oh, hey, if you don't mind, a piece of advice, and it's strictly anecdotal, but I've seen it in action and it works.
Water?
No, Gatorade.
Well, it'll have to be water.
Well,
the thing said to drink 12 ounces of water.
The technique that I've seen work is drink 32 ounces of Gatorade.
Oh, Jesus.
16 before and 16 immediately after.
Well, I've got to stop at the store on the way back, so I'll do the after part. And that's a good idea. As a matter of fact, I'll put that on the list.
Well, you could pop into CVS a little bit before your shot appointment, and pound one down then.
Yeah, well, the way I'm timing it, I'm due there 10 minutes early, and the appointment's for 10. But I'm aiming to get there about 9:20, something like that. That's the way the buses are working. So yeah, that's a good idea. I'll get the Gatorade and pound. How much? 32 ounces?
Well, just get a 16. Yeah, get a pint one and drink it, and then drink another pint after.
Okay. And I may treat myself to a taxi ride home rather than fucking around.
That just blows my mind that you're getting your shot at 10 o'clock at night.
Well, it's a 24-hour CVS, and when I thought I could go to the CVS in the Target just down the street where I got my first two shots, but they don't have the Moderna, and I don't want to mix and match. I want to get, the Moderna for all three. But what are there any reactions afterwards? Because I didn't have a bit of trouble other than arm soreness.
No. Have you had your flu shot?
No, I haven't had a flu shot ever.
Might want to get one of those too somewhere down the line. Get it in the injection shot, get it in the arm that you got your first shot in.
That would be my left arm.
Okay. And I had Pfizer, but all I had out of it, it was weird. Well, next to nothing initially, no arm soreness because I did the Gatorade thing. That's what I attribute it to. But like 4 days later, just a whopping headache, and a weird little headache maybe a week and a half later, and then nothing. And nothing that ibuprofen wouldn't help.
Other than the arm soreness, which is more noticeable on the second shot than the first, on the second shot, a couple of days after, I felt kind of sluggish. But not, that would impair me in any way. But
yeah,
I'm
just,
not going.
Just kind of a bubble off plum.
Yeah, something like that. But, I don't have any plans to go anywhere. Nobody's coming here. I ain't going nowhere. I've already gotten my stuff for New Year's, my black eyed peas and my greens, and I'm going to go up to the store and get cornbread a couple of days before. But
make sure you get yourself some hog jowl.
Well, I don't know what that brings, but
that means you open it, it's good luck. It means you open the year eating high on the hog.
Well, maybe I'll buy a bag of pork rinds.
Not the same.
Not the same,
because that can come from anywhere on yonder hog.
Oh, dear.
Jowl, all jowl is the best bacon there is. It's the same as bacon. It just doesn't come from the belly. It comes from the jowl.
I just, it's not that I'm against pork. I barely eat meat as it is. I just don't know.
Well, what are you going to season your greens with or your black-eyed peas?
Well, I'm getting them pre-seasoned, so I'm a big fan of Glory Greens.
Yeah. Yeah,
they pre-season pretty well.
Margaret Holmes. I was going to say Margaret Hamilton, but it was like, no.
I'll get you, my little pretty.
Yeah, well, of course, she sold, Chase and Sanborn coffee?
No, Maxwell House.
Was it Maxwell House?
Yes, it was. It was. And then after she passed on, Linda Ellerbe for a while did Maxwell House commercials, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Another fine product of General Foods.
Well, Scott, you won't even feel the needle, but you already know that. But it's the smartest thing you can be doing. It really, really is.
Well, I was eligible on the 19th, the 20th, actually, because you have to wait till the 19th before the thing lets you set an appointment. And I figured, well, Thursday, all the other times were times when it wasn't convenient for me. And I don't really like the idea of going to this faraway pharmacy compared to the one a half a mile away. But this one, the place where I got my first two shots, for some reason, didn't have the Moderna, just the Pfizer. And I think the Pfizer was the only one they had. And I don't want to mix and match, so I'll just bite the proverbial bullet, as it were.
Understood.
And get a little fresh air, get a little rain on my head, get a chance to use my duck umbrella. Hopefully the buses are running correctly and I can go there, take a cab back, and just be all set. I won't come out again till Monday.
And that is how so many of us have gotten through.
Yeah, I mean, it's the responsible thing to do, and I wish more people would do it. There's no way to make them. That's the insidious thing. People who are misinformed.
Well, I mean, there are ways to make them. You can make it mandatory, and it's if we had a sane Supreme Court, there wouldn't even be a question over it.
Yeah, but you're. Have you looked at the Supreme Court lately?
Yeah, that's what I just. Yeah. And it turns out more and more data has come out, Scott, showing the vast amounts of dark money that went into Amy COVID Barrett's confirmation process.
No doubt.
Yeah, it was just sleazy as hell.
Yeah, the current picture of the Supreme Court, the portrait, where they're all in there together,
mm-hmm.
Sanity is not the word that's used as for the caption of the picture.
Yeah, you can't fool me. I know there ain't no sanity. You can't fool me. I know there ain't no sanity clause.
Well, I was trying to avoid that, but
Chico Marx.
All right. Well, let me.
Yeah, you get out of here and plan to make your journey. Jude says a quote. She loves the poet Rumi, the Persian poet Rumi. Wherever you stand, be the soul of that place. Jude says, my very best to all. And since you are Moderna, she said, my first two shots were Moderna with slight body ache, but my Moderna booster laid me out for 2 days. Horrible full headache, weakness that kept me pretty much down in bed. Third day went to work, but was so drained I needed to leave early. On the fourth day, I was energized and strong again.
What does the Gatorade do? I'll keep that in mind. That's one of the reasons I'm taking.
Well, it hydrates and it boosts your electrolytes. And we all know that electrolytes are what plants crave.
Hmm.
But, electrolytes provide
But wouldn't a little Miracle-Grow do the same thing? I mean, if you get
well, I mean, if you're going to go that route, just go straight to the fucking aquarium cleaner, Scott. I mean,
you
want
those plant sticks and shove it in some appropriate orifice? I don't know.
No, that's where the black light bulb goes. Orifices.
Worked on my hydrangeas. That's all I know.
I mean, and remember, the horse paste is apple flavored.
Yeah, I use that for caulking against this one window.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. If Mr. Ed doesn't endorse it, then I'm not for it.
Yeah, and the guy who was taking the horse paste, by the way, just to call to mind Jesse Lee Peterson of Los Angeles, California. He did.
Well, there's a lot of them that have gone on to the great beyond. We had a guy, or maybe it wasn't a California guy. It was a guy somewhere that was a big monkey muck who was anti-everything. And now he's doing it from a depth of 6 feet.
Exactly.
In the good earth.
And Haley in Arkansas says, I did the sugar-free Powerade before on Tuesday. In my town, the Moderna vaccine is only given out once a week at that pharmacy. Got mine while on lunch break at work. No sore arm, but felt weak the next day.
Well, I can always use an excuse for not doing a lot of housework.
Yeah.
So it all works out, and I'll be fully vaxxed. And when I do go out, I'll continue to wear my mask. And
take all your precautions.
Well, if you're going to be a responsible human being, that's the way to go. And it's like I said once a while back about the once upon a time, the GOP claimed to be the party that was, quote, pro-life and the party of personal responsibility.
I remember when they called themselves the grown-ups.
Oh, well, that ship is
sunk.
It's just off the coast of Ireland by now. That ship, jeez. And there are people that buy into it. I mean, without question, they won't even, you know, they don't even have like, a governor in their head or something that says, no, wait a minute, that can't possibly be right. This is how far gone they are. That's the thing that's troubling. And we're back to square one again. How do you have a dialogue, you know, with folks like that? And I don't know. There's no commonality. You know, there's no unified theory, just a basic baseline. Any baseline would be basic, I guess. There's no baseline where reality is concerned. And if you don't have that as a jumping off point, I don't know.
I know. And we're back to the difference between bananas and monkey wrenches.
Or dual carburetors. See, when I see a banana, I see a dual carburetor. I don't know why. But
no, I've never seen a purple cow. Hope I never see one. But I can tell you here and now, I'd rather see them be the one.
Does your baloney have a first name?
It's O-S-C-A-R.
All right.
My baloney has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R.
That's my case. But I never once wished to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. I never wanted to be that.
No. It was the filler, I think.
Well, it's, I don't know what is in there, but.
Then again, I had bigger problems than that, but never mind.
Well, that's probably a good note to close on.
Yeah, we probably should. But I should tell you, Steve in New York, as he convalesces, says the program tonight was great. Long time since Scott had a good long conversation with you. So.
Well, it's been crazy times.
And we, look, almost 3 hours of radio. Oh, God. But what this means, happily, though, is that there will be a Friday on the front porch. And it would be lovely, and it's Christmas Eve. And we can, you know, have a
Christmas Eve, ha ha ha, ho ho ho, kind of Friday on the front porch.
Well, that sounds like a plan. I'll check in to let you know I'm still upright.
Yeah, please
above
do.
Ground.
Please do. And you know, if you, I'm terribly curious about the apple flavor, but don't take one from the tin there, okay?
Well, like I say, I have survived brain tumor surgery, 2 divorces, and more Republican presidencies than I care to count.
A rodeo and dinner on the ground.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that this will be, if not a cinch, at least something that is not going to be too troublesome.
Absolutely non-memorable. That's what we're rooting for.
All right. I'll
and smells.
And smells, dot, dot, dot. All right.
Scott, you have a good night, my friend.
Get the copywriter on the phone. Get Don on the phone.
Hang up, Scott.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good night.
See ya.
Nighthorn, folks.
Bye.
See ya.
And so that's the program for this evening. What a delightful conversation that was. Again, Friday on the front porch tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. And then we get on the road back home. So thanks, everybody who jumped in to help out with fundraising. That I can't tell you how important that is. We are at, let's see, I guess tomorrow we'll be at 1655. So thank you so much. And thanks for keeping this all going and all on the air. And we'll get back to a regular broadcast schedule. I can't wait. And thanks to each and every one of you who, through your partial sponsorships, keep this program on the air. Your kind gifts through Patreon, PayPal, a la carte contributions. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program through whatsoever means you choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to Steve. Even if I couldn't see you guys, I got to, well, it'd be nice when I get home. Never mind. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time. Well, no, they're out of session. No, really, it would be a great time. Call or email your member of the House of Representatives. Ask them to co-sponsor HR 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. Please stay safe. Do like Scott. Go get your booster if you haven't already. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Keep your hand sanitizer near and dear at all times. Keep a little bottle in your purse, your backpack, your pocket, whatever. But don't always count on it being there for you, because a lot of the time it's not, especially depending on where you may be. And, Of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, "And it smells," avoid that person like the plague. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.